Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to you all. This is the Business Day Spotlight, your destination for African business made simple. My name is Mriwa Gabaza, and for today, I find myself in Centurion at Telkom's headquarters. And today, we're having a discussion, about research, about innovation, and where all of that lies, in a world where technology is moving at such a fast pace. And I'm joined today by Dr. Tsabi Molapo, who is an executive for research and innovation at Telkom, and we're going to be trying to understand the link between research and innovation and the business value that is driven through an organization such as Telkom. Dr. Molapo, greetings to you today.
Good morning. How are you?
No, alive, good, well, and thriving. It's good to be joining you for today. Usually at this point in the conversation, we ask about the, where do you come from? What is the organization? What do you guys do? But Telkom is well established. It's a household name. So instead of getting into that part, maybe when we talk about you being an executive for research and innovation, what is under your purview? What are the types of things that you guys are working on?
Sure, thanks. Welcome to Telkom Buck.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So we are located within the Telkom Group Corporate Center, meaning that we look after all the operations from all the Telkom subsidiaries and business units. And our unit broadly, the one where our R&D function sits, is called Innovation and Transformation. And within there, I look after R&D, which is research and development, as well as innovation linked to research. Mm-hmm. And there's three threads, rather, that fall within our R&D portfolio. The first is our commercial industry research, which we can talk more about. This is a research that we do specifically focused on the business, and that's at the industry. And the second thread there is our program called Telkom Center of Excellence Program, COE. And within there, we fund university-based research and postgraduate students studying towards computer science, engineering at most universities around the country. So that's more, again, broad, university-based research. And then linked to that, our unit actually holds a conference called CyTNAC. CyTNAC is, Telkom's flagship conference that's held every year, which brings together academia, industry, and government, actually, an industry-leading event. Again, bringing together conversations in telecommunications, in all kinds of technology-focused areas as well. Mm. Yeah, so our unit looks after that too.
Okay, cool. So maybe what we can do, because we come from the world of business, finance, that's the audience that we're catering to. I think we would be most interested in the first part that you spoke about, the type of research that you're doing, for Telkom and to drive the business forward. Maybe you could give us an idea of that. When I look at, global companies, especially in the technology sphere, people are spending billions on research and development. Right now, I think AI is the big thing that we talk about, and we hear companies like NVIDIA, AMD, all of these companies, trying to edge each other out in one way or another. And a lot of that is being done through, the IP, the research and development, type of units. So if we bring that idea back down to a Telkom, what is it that you guys are working on? Is there methodology that you guys use to conduct the work that you do? Do you get into it with, maybe there's a product we want to do, but it's how do we make that happen? Or do you research something and then from those insights you say, actually, we can offer this to the market?
Yeah. So, look, you'll find that industry research labs are set up in different ways.
Yeah.
So before I came to lead research at Telkom, I spent almost 5 years at IBM Research, again, another industry R&D lab, which, as you can imagine, serves an international company with, business areas that are quite broad across the world. But here at Telkom, our strategy for R&D is what we like to call homegrown innovation. So what this means is we look at, most importantly, the challenges of Telkom as a business.
Yeah.
And the opportunities that we have based on, for example, our infrastructure, you know, our customer base, and again, the diversity of our subsidiaries as well. So we begin by looking at what can we solve for at Telkom. And then we learn a lot from what's happening around the world, right, across other telcos and within the industry as a whole. And so we think, how do we solve Telkom's challenges?
Yeah.
How do we explore the opportunities that we have as a business using technologies, methodologies from around the world, but with a view of building for the industry. So if there's a component, a technology solution that we develop within our R&D unit, solving for Telkom, it has to be commercializable beyond Telkom. So that's our view of the value of R&D, right? So we say, we solve for Telkom, learn from the world, and build for the broader industry, okay? And normally the range of R&D can go from what is called fundamental research.
Mm-hmm.
So your more blue sky research, very deep, scientific discovery, or the very, founding blocks of engineering. And we don't do that as much because that requires significantly more funding. It requires, very broad and deep expertise in very specialized areas. But research goes all the way to applied research. Mm-hmm. And our focus more is on industry-based applied research. So from a business point of view, we look at three things.
Yeah.
Our research looks to improve customer experience. So as one of the main objectives for R&D, we also look at cost saving. So efficiency that is linked to the cost to serve our customers. So that is another significant value to business. And the last, which is what we typically, define as value, is creating or enabling new revenue. But the other two dimensions are as critical, because if you improve customer experience, if you reduce your cost of serving the customer, you become more efficient, you optimize, your operations, then that translates to, to business value in some form. Okay. I don't know if that answers all the questions around. We can take it further.
No, it does. I think at least from the way I'm understanding it, because you correct me if I'm wrong, what I'm hearing you say is that you learn from the world to solve for Telkom's challenges in a way that can be commercialized for Telkom and the broader industry.
Absolutely.
I've understood that.
Yes, that's correct. True. Yes, that is true.
I find the approach interesting simply because there's, I don't know if I can call it a stereotype, but you often get the sense that when developing any type of R&D effort, that it's to create a moat of some sort around a business. But this sounds more like an open, approach. Am I understanding that correctly?
Open in that we need to commercialize research somewhat.
Yeah.
And the misconception is always that, you can't commercialize research.
Yeah.
And ideally, that's not the main motivation, right? That's why we have product teams that build to immediately commercialize.
Yeah.
But as R&D globally, and you can see this movement around the world as well, is we're saying what commercial value can we derive out of the work that we do? And this doesn't mean that, in our R&D lab, we'll develop a fully ready for market product.
Mm-hmm.
But what it means is we build core components, we build core capabilities, which once you bring into the business, then lead to commercial value.
Mm-hmm.
But at the core is where we could potentially find our IP.
Yeah.
So as much as we build for the world, right, at the center of all of that, which is where the R&D comes in, is some really, in-depth innovation, some in-depth discoveries that our research efforts can bring. And I think that's maybe where the differentiation occurs with R&D, in that, I didn't mention that we have our flagship lab, The first Telecom Industry Solutions Lab is based at FITS.
Yeah.
Because our approach with that was, we want to bring multidisciplinary experts, right, into our ecosystem to help build, you know, the foundations of our research work. So if, for example, we take, you know, an opportunity or a challenge within, let's say, the telecom mobile space, right? As I said, we build our research not, you know, out of thin air. We don't just look at what's happening, maybe say with TNT, you know, et cetera, and immediately build.
Yeah.
We bring our teams here at Telkom to actually spend a lot of time with our technical business teams to truly deeply understand what are the challenges here within the business. So then once we understand that, then we build teams that are multidisciplinary. For example, one of the projects we are running now has a team of systems engineers, you know, business science researchers. We have human-computer interaction experts. We have computer scientists, AI researchers, building one team,
yeah.
Right? And that's the differentiation you get with R&D, is you don't often get a chance to build the core of our products,
yeah,
which are based on really, really well thought out research. Yeah. Yeah, so I think that's where the difference comes in.
Okay. And I like the way that you are, I guess, explaining some of those differences. And a big curiosity on my side is, from what you can see, because you have to take a global view and then you have to come back and take a telecom view, where in your view is South Africa when it comes to either being ahead or behind, when it comes to, you know, certain trends? When I look back at the history of, I guess, telecoms in South Africa over the last couple of decades, there are a couple of innovations. I think prepaid, for example, is something that came, that was led by, if I remember correctly, South Africa was one of the leaders, you know, globally when it came to, guys, actually people can do prepaid, hey, it can be done. That's an effort coming from here, that's a leading. But in certain aspects, obviously South Africa has been behind and you're playing the catch-up game. But in aggregate, you know, how do you find the, what you call this? I hate the words thought leadership, but where is South Africa's thought leadership as an industry when you look at it within the context of the globe?
Yeah, look, from an academic point of view, you would obviously look at things like patents, research publications, mm-hmm, etc. And it's hard to say which areas of technology South Africa is leading per se.
Yeah.
But one thing that's important is we are active players within many of these areas. And the beautiful thing is most of that is done by our universities, which is why for us as Telkom, it's a strategic decision actually to fund academic research, because that's where the depth of excellence comes from when it comes to advancements in technology. So even if you look at our institutions that work in AI, there's a lot of groundbreaking work that's been done, that's been published, you know, in international conferences, which means we are competing, we are competitive enough,
yeah,
you know, on global stages. But also in terms of patents, many universities now are focusing on, you know, IP development efforts to take what we develop within the universities and, you know, and patent that around the world. For example, some of the work that we fund, which we are now bringing back into the business. I can think of a few examples of work we fund at universities. There's a lot of work, for example, I think Stellenbosch, University of Limpopo, for example, are working on NLP and AI for that's basically focused on African languages in particular. And we're very deliberate about funding such work, because if we are going to
Can I just confirm that by NLP you're talking about natural language processing?
Exactly, natural language processing. There's elements of natural language processing, but also things such as speech recognition, so speech to text. Those are very difficult tasks to do in some of our South African languages, and it requires a lot more research, building resources for computing, etc. So we are finding such work because no one else will. Right. And so those are some of the areas where we found with multilingual NLP that South Africa is, you know, is playing an active role. There's a lot of work that we are finding in IoT. So IoT, a lot of sensor works, a lot of sensor technologies. And again, it's hard to to compare with what's happening in the rest of the world, but we are seeing a lot of innovations there. Some examples include, I think I can think of University of Pretoria. University of Pretoria is using, again, sensors, UAVs, so unmanned aerial vehicles, drones, actually, for applications in agriculture, for cattle farming, etc. So this is work that we are funding and bringing back into the company as well to see how do we use the same technologies in our context. Mm-hmm. I think of also like University of Johannesburg is using fiber optic sensors actually. So think of a fiber line.
Yeah.
And they're using those as sensors for different applications. In the built environment, even I think one of the fascinating pieces of work we saw recently is using fiber optic to detect and predict sinkholes. So you have a fiber optic running underground,
yeah,
and you use that to sense certain, you know, factors that could inform the formation of a sinkhole underground. So these are, I think you hear, these are applied research topics, but that basically, are built upon this more, what's the English word? Cutting edge technologies.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I like all the examples that you've just given, and the geek inside me has been awakened, you know, quite a bit. And I wanted to maybe pick your brain on the natural language processing. One of my criticisms towards because AI development has been there for a long time. It just so happens that ChatGPT brought it to the main, you know, brought it into the mainstream consciousness. And now everyone and their cat wants to be involved with AI in one way or another. 2023 was the year in which we, I guess, understood the power. And I think 2024 is the year in which we're actually now saying these are the actual use cases, right? Samsung recently released its latest crop of phones, and there's a lot of natural language processing that is happening, in line with Google. And I remember when all that was happening, my biggest criticism was, this is great for certain parts of the world, right? They will benefit from this, but, for, you know, this part of the world, the broader African continent, there doesn't feel like there's a lot of support, that there aren't a lot of models that could be, you know, used, you know, to underpin some of these, you know, cutting edge technologies to push us to a place where you can get onto the phone and have natural real time translation happening. You're speaking in Zulu, someone else is speaking in French. And I guess you're the expert. I've just, you know, I'm now considering myself an armchair critic, and I'm now asking the expert to say how long before I guess we can start to see some real mainstream use cases that the ordinary person can, you know, can take advantage of in, let's say, just languages in South Africa, for example. Obviously, there are big language sets such as, I think, the Francophone countries can take advantage of French.
The
Portuguese African countries can take advantage of that. Many of us can take advantage of English. But what about blocks like Swahili, Zulu, Xhosa? Yeah.
So I think I'm thinking as you're saying that, there's almost three elements to this, right?
Mm-hmm.
The first is, let's just assume we all used English, mm-hmm, right? We are not, again, in my view, we are not doing enough to exploit what's already there, right? If you look across the industry locally, if you look at our universities, look at our schools, even the basic generative AI as we know it now, we need to explore it and build applications. We need to explore applications of AI in education. We need to bring in the technology we already have now into business. And I don't think we are doing that rigorously enough, which is why, again, R&D is important, because in our lab, as an example, right, we are now saying, let's bring in this technology and begin to test quickly, right? What can we build with what is already there? I think that's quite important. I don't think we're doing that enough. There is a lot that can already be done, solving for our context. Again, going back to our model of learning from the world, taking existing technologies that are global,
mm-hmm,
right, solving for our local, not taking it beyond telecom, right? Solving for our local context and then building for broader scale. I don't think we're doing that enough. But now coming back to making it accessible in our languages, then that's, again, there's two layers to that. The first is, again, that is just almost pure NLP, recognition of speech, okay? And the processing of spoken speech in our languages. That's one. It's a whole task to recognize speech and then transcribe that into text. So doing that itself, it's not a trivial task. And then even if the language is now in text, then processing it, you know, that is to say, understanding what this word means, what the sentence means, that's, you know, that's a whole other task on its own. And we are supposed to be deliberate in terms of funding the research to advance that. And advancing it means, building resources, building corpora. So this means, you know, collecting thousands and thousands of hours of speech, speech spoken in our different languages.
Training the models.
Exactly, training the models. It's been collecting lots of text, labeling it. Because, you know, for the more resource languages, you have labeled corpora, that you're then able to train in different ways. These are expensive tasks because in some cases, even if you take machine translation, for certain tests, you actually need to have parallel English, either text or speech, English and one of the low resource languages. Sometimes with the newer techniques, you don't necessarily need to have, you know, parallel labeled sets, but in some cases, you still need to do that. There's a lot of work that goes into, again, outsourcing the sort of tasks to native language speakers. So that's another thing. It's just being able to access the systems to be able to speak, you know, to a computer system, to be able to type in your language and have the computer system, you know, output, you know, the text or the audio in your language. Underneath that is a whole other story as well, which is to say, if you look at ChatGPT or some of the other generative AI, tools that are already public, if you go and query, because now it's beyond access, now it's about what you query. If you go and query one of these, especially search engine-based systems that are able to ping up, you know, knowledge from the world, even if you ask in isiZulu, even if you ask in English, as long as these models don't have a global view of knowledge or information of what we do, you won't find anything. So let's say you want to ask a healthcare question, even if you ask it in isiZulu, if the models don't have information on, you know, locally relevant healthcare information, then it still won't be useful. I said a lot of things, but I think at the core of it is, to summarize, exploring our world with what is already there, because there's a lot that's already developed. But then below that is we need to invest in our languages in terms of being able to speak and hear, you know, write and read in our languages. But underneath that as well, we need to develop locally relevant information for the web and for other sources that AI models can use to provide these solutions for us.
Well, I certainly hope that we're going to see a lot more work being done in this space. It has been encouraging, you know, to hear that people are taking this task on. And I think for me, it's even, I think I'm going to use the word sad, that we talk about, you know, high-resourced and low-resourced languages even, but that's the reality of the world that we live in. Perhaps on the last point, for today's discussion, we started off by talking about the fact that you are a doctor, and we've sort of gotten into the weeds quite a bit about, you know, things like AI and some of the tasks that you're doing. For yourself, you know, people, for the uninitiated, what has been your area of specialization and what's the journey that's led you here to talk?
Sure. That's quite a journey. Thank you for using that word. So I started my career almost as a computer engineer. So I studied undergrad computer systems and networks, which in many ways was actually telecommunications engineering. So it's been almost a full circle being at telecom, because I began studying telecommunications Waldorf was 15, 16 years ago. And then I went and did my master's and PhD in computer science, but focused on what is called human-computer interaction, which is basically studying how do we design systems and solutions based on our understanding of human factors, so human behavior, human psychology, etc. Because that's the only way you build things people can use, is we build things understanding what human needs, how humans read, etc. But then at the same time, ensuring that, especially for the local context, that we are designing specifically for African communities that differ, right? And again, a lot of that work was in education, focus on healthcare, etc. And that's sort of how I got into NLP, because it was in that area that, you know, we started to you do research in rural areas or in many of our African communities. You don't go and engage in English, right? You engage in the local language. You collect data in the local language. And a lot of that work now has to be transcribed, analyzed manually, right? And that's sort of where the interest in automated processing came in, and realizing the complexities of doing that with our local languages. And after many years in academia, lecturing, doing research, that's when I joined IBM Research. And a lot of our work there was in AI. I ended up leading the South African Research Lab in NLP, focusing on, again, healthcare and education and, you know, applications of NLP in those areas. Towards the end of my time at IBM, I also led quantum computing, actually, because we were trying generally within the country to build competency in quantum computing. Again, bringing research to walk ahead of the industry to take us to the next level. We're focusing a lot on quantum education at that time. And so coming into telecom again, as we began, now I'm fully almost back to telecommunications, except often if you hear conversations, we don't do telecoms only. Now we do technologies, we do what, you know, we are now calling InfraCo. So yeah, now I'm looking after research and innovation within that space.
Okay. And I think that's a good place for us to end what has been a very fascinating discussion. The geek inside me, as I said, you know, was able to go down some rabbit holes. So really thank you, you know, for indulging, you know, an inquisitive mind on that point of view. It has been a really great discussion, and I guess good to see and hear how a company like Telkom, how technology companies, different technology companies approach their research and development efforts. We often hear, you know, the fact that countries, you know, are throwing a lot of money at research and development, technology companies and, you know, companies in other sectors. And we often wonder, you know, some of the linkages of why is this thing so important? And I think some of the examples that we're being given today made perfect sense, such as the natural language processing that we're talking about, to say there are all these great technologies that are now beginning to be used in other parts of the world, but there's a lot of infrastructure that needs to be built in a country like South Africa to make those things happen and to take advantage of some of those capabilities. And fortunately, unfortunately, there needs to be investment, you know, in that space to make it happen. Also, I think the journey that she, you know, gave us in terms of her own career helps us to understand why and how she ended up in the role that she's doing. Because I think at the beginning, you talked about how a big part of the work that you do is informed by addressing customer needs. And as someone who, you know, spoke about human-computer interaction, it's all making sense in my head. So really fascinating discussion, and you know, hoping to catch up once again in a couple of months. Who knows what type of conversations we will be having a year and a half, maybe even 2 years from now. I'm hoping that by then we'll be able to have you know, some type of voice generated AI that's speaking back to us in Zulu, you know, or Xhosa, because of the work that would have been done by some of the funding and you know, some of the research efforts that are being made here. So that was it. We're in conversation with Dr. Tsabi Mwalapo, who is the executive for research and innovation over at Telkom. Dr. Mwalapo, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you so much for this conversation. It was fascinating.
And that's been it for this edition of the Business Day Spotlight. Remember that you can find our latest podcast on Business Live. That's under the podcast Business Day Spotlight tab on Twitter with hashtag BD Spotlight. And remember that you can review and subscribe for free on iono.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, or wherever you choose to get your pods casted. I've been Mudiwa Gavaza of the Business Day and Financial Mail. And this has been another edition of the Business Day Spotlight, which is a multimedia live production. So from myself and the rest of the team, it is good evening, good afternoon, and good morning.